Blog Talk Radio. Log Talk Radio.
This thing right here,
yeah.
For my people's in the streets.
Yes, today. You know, as we start this show, this one mic.
We hail. There is a pause throughout the stadium as this man sounds like he just coughed up a lung. They're looking around the Jumbotron shows and pans the cheerleaders, and as it goes down each cheerleader's face, each one breaks up into laughter, which at this particular time destroys half the stadium. The other half is still trying to figure out what the hell just happened. Does this guy need CPR or something? And then at that particular time, I lost it. Devon Drup.
Yes. Today,
Love Talk Radio.
This one, Mike.
Phoenix is another place. They got a great training staff. I mean, they were able to breathe life back into Shaq. And if you can do that, you know, people talk a lot about their training staff.
Yes, today, you know, as we start this show, this one mic.
Yes, we have reached the dog days of summer. And it's been interrupted by the oasis known as the MLB All-Star Game and NBA Free Agency. And yes, Timmy has retired. As always, we'd like to thank you for spending your next 90 minutes with us here with the one mic with myself and my guy Hank, as we bless the mic and talk about what is happening in sports today. Before I get into that, though, I'd like to say we want to thank that we're brought to you by Blog Talk Radio. All the callers come in on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. And we'd like to also encourage you to subscribe to us on iTunes. Provide us with some feedback. We love some 5 ratings and some reviews. But it's been good, and thank you. And welcome to RSG One Mic, our platform to get a little bit deeper into topics. As I know, we're here with my guy Hank. And Hank, I just want to welcome you to the mic. How you doing tonight?
Man, I'm going to tell you how I'm doing. It's so hot here in the Midwest. I could have sworn I saw the devil taking an ice bath when I came in the house today. I'm telling you, man, it's hot around here. I don't want to complain about it because this is a 4-season state that we live in, and it could basically have a blizzard tomorrow. I doubt it. If that happens, I know that all lives is definitely going to matter at that time. But I can tell you right now, I feel good. I feel pumped up. I feel glad to be here tonight, and let's just get it started.
Wow. Well, hey, let's start with our Bless the Mic setting segment. Now, the big fundamental retires. And nah, he's not going to do a tour. He's going to send you a fax, and they're going to post the letter up. And then you're going to have Popovich come out, look like he came out in front of his house and talk to you about his retirement. Man, that is so Tim Duncan.
Let me tell you.
You all had a chance to watch it. What's your thoughts about Tim?
You know what? I love Tim Duncan. You know, the big fundamental, one of the best nicknames in professional sports, and he was. And I think that Tim Duncan is one of those kind of players that could basically transcend generations because his game was, you know, he was a bad basketball player, a big man that had nice low post moves, could move around in the paint, had a nice little jumper around the paint, you know, defended well in his youth. You know, everybody talked about the Admiral. And the Admiral, you know, David Robinson, didn't win nothing until he got Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan has always been the epitome of class. A lot of old-school hoopers like the San Antonio Spurs because of that big three and how they play. You know, he's going to be missed, but he was very, you know, if you watch the game at all, it was very clear that his skills had diminished. He got absolutely abused in the series against Oklahoma City. I'm going to miss him. You know, I wish, you know, there were more big men like him. He wasn't a liability on the free throw line. You know, a few years ago when they lost to the Miami Heat, I was screaming at the top of my lungs at Popovich because he was taking him out at the end of those games. But he figured it out later. You know, he's going to be, again, a class act. You're right, no tours. And if anybody deserved one, it was Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
Five titles, you know, with the San Antonio Spurs. And when they didn't win it, they were in it. And you could not, you know, you absolutely could not count them out, you know, when he was on the floor and when they got to playoff basketball. So, again, era of basketball, retired, you know, God bless him. And I wish him all the luck in the world. You know, just again, just an epitome of class. I'm done. I'm gonna let y'all know, and that's it.
What's so great about it is, I mean, it's just like he writes the letter, they post it on the website, post it on all the other social media platforms, and that's it. You might get an interview at the halftime of the first Spurs NBA nationally televised game where he might talk. But, I mean, it's just, you're right. And I'm wondering if because he did that, I think both you and I appreciate the fact that he stayed in the small market. He won five titles, you know. And we have this saying when I'm on the big show with my guy Marcus and Phil, and shout out to those guys, and to Justin Page, who was also on with us, started doing the NBA review. Check us out on the iTunes podcast. It was a great podcast. But one of the things we talk about is a little room. Like there's a Hall of Fame, and then there's that room. You know, Michael is probably sitting at the head of the table, you know, at the room with the big piece of chicken. But when people do the rankings of, like, their top 50 or top whatever, and they get to that top 10, it's interesting when they have a guy like Tim Duncan. And the more I thought about it, I was like, that's a guy that should be in a small room, right? But – is he not in a small room because he didn't make enough noise?
You're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Tim Duncan, well, he came, you know, he did his job, and then he went home. And, you know, he didn't need a whole lot of flash and fluff, but there wasn't nobody stopping him. Especially around the paint. He was a textbook player as far as how to play around in the paint. You know, he's the one of the kind of players that you watch if you're a big man simply because you just love all the things he could do in that paint. And then if he got fouled, he's going to kill you on the free throw line. You know, I mean, two or three MVPs of the finals for the Spurs. I mean, again, but he was quiet. You know, and I don't mean that he spoke and everything, but he didn't need no tour. He don't need nobody calling his name. He don't need a bunch of gifts that he ain't going to do nothing with. He don't need the whole NBA to thank him for nothing. You know, and I think that is just a far cry, especially when you think about the fact he spent his entire career in San Antonio. Like you said, a small market of a team. He spends his whole career there, wins five titles, put them on the map, and then quietly rides off into the sunset. Class. Absolute class.
And it's interesting. I mean, Popovich doesn't get emotional very often, but it was obvious when he was doing that press conference yesterday. I mean, you don't get often to see that side of Popovich. I think he's like Belichick, that people who know him probably know a riot he is, kind of thing like that, but is very guarded in terms of how he does the public stuff. We'll push back even in that space, but you could tell how powerful that relationship is, almost like, you know, a son. And people talk about that, but you can literally say, you know, they're connected. So that says a lot about it. I think the one group that's not going to miss Tim are referees. Like, everybody talks about how nice Tim was, but Tim never fouled anybody. Like, every time he turned around, he would argue with the referee. I will say that. I'm going to say some nice things about Tim back there, but them referees, boy, they like, I'm glad he's gone.
Well, yeah, he had something to say all the time. You're absolutely right. Every time you looked around, like, he was whining to the referee, his head bent down. Yeah, you'll see that going down the floor every time. But make no mistake about it, this is an end of an era where you think about it. I heard it on the radio. Someone made a great comparison. Look at the San Antonio Spurs. Now, the way that franchise is set up and with some of the players they still have, you know, they're going to be competitive still for a long time. It's going to be a challenge for Pop to go and coach this team, you know, post Tim Duncan. But it's not going to be the same. You're not going to have the big fella in your locker room anymore. Somebody made the comparison of, like, you look at the New England Patriots. All right, the way that franchise is set up, once Tom Brady goes, they may be, they'll still be competitive. But you're going to be, that's going to be a different locker room when you don't have that player in there anymore that knows how to win and knows how to talk to those young players. It's an end of an era. And make no mistake about it, they left. You know, that team won 67 ball games this past year. So you're not talking about a team that's trying to rebuild. They're going to try to reload. And it's going to be interesting to see how they do it without Duncan.
I mean, you make an interesting point around because I think one of the things that I've often said a lot on our podcast is that, you know, key to winning, to building really good teams, are to have key veterans. To me, when we think about what Cleveland accomplished this year, having Ricky Jefferson in the locker room, not only a veteran, but a veteran who can contribute, and that kind of behind-the-scenes mentoring is critical. And so even though Tim wasn't as active and still some decent numbers in the regular season, but what he gave to making sure everybody was clear about how they were going to approach the game. I mean, I think the only other person that is more unassuming that he's kind of passed the torch to is Kawhi Leonard. We don't know what kind of leader he is in that capacity. We're going to find out. He's definitely leading on the court in a way that Tim was leading. I mean, he's there. He's lunch pail. I mean, I'm surprised I don't see him in any plaid shirts like Tim used to wear before they made him do the dress code. You know, but Kawhi is following in those footsteps. In that way, but we don't know what his impact is on other players, and that's something that is going to remain seen because then you're going to have Ginobili's going to be next and Parker is going to be and then it's like who they got a lot of good players, but like you said, who's going to be those leaders in the locker room? And they did get Pau Gasol, but Pau Gasol is nearing the end of his run. I mean, as well, so it's not like Pau can take over. So. Is Aldridge going to be able to step into that role? Aldridge is that kind of guy, but can he take over in that space? And we'll remain to be seen because you're right. What they lose in terms of the leadership, how they approach the game, holding the brand. Obviously, Popovich has got his arms around that team, but as you know, and I would say this even in organizations, you and I both have leadership roles in our organizations. Our organization is only as good as our people in terms of the leadership in the locker room. All great organizations require you to have locker room leadership and people policing the locker room. In professional sports, that is the place. It's the locker room is the place where the players rule. And great teams have order in that space. And Tim Duncan, the reason why they were so great is because people like Tim Duncan made sure, from getting the torch from Robinson, made sure that there was a way in which they were going to approach it. And everybody knew it when they came to the team.
Absolutely.
You know, similar to, kind of our you and I are Piston fans, similar to the Pistons, and being that kind of team, everybody knew you had the New Orleans Beard before you got the game on in. You know, San Antonio, it's clear when people come to San Antonio, there is a way in which the orientation of that process is handled.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to see. You know, Popovich is going to lay down. He's going to find a way. He's going to retool. He got some talent. You know, obviously you don't have the legend in the room. We're going to have an opportunity to kind of square that. You know, when we come back, we're going to get a little bit more into NBA talk. Now, before we came on the air, my guy had a lot to say about his feelings about where the league is right now. And when we come back, we'll give Hank an opportunity to really let his wings fly a little bit on as we try to close it up here on White Mike in the NBA season when we come back from this musical interlude.
I'm loosening up.
Nothing can stop me, I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up. Nothing can stop me, I'm all the way up. never leave, never leave. Counting up this money, we ain't never sleep, never sleep. You got V12, I got 12 V's. Got bottles, got weed, got hats. I'm all the way up. Shorty, what you want? I got what you need. Shorty, what you want? I got what you need. Shorty, what you want? I got what you need.
I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up. All the way up. Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up.
For my niggas with Bentley coupes and Rolexes. Kicked the bitch out the room and gave her no breakfast. Had to stash the jewels. These bitches so reckless. Keep on so cruise. I'm talking.
All right, we're all the way up. This is D. Wills with One Mic here on the Real Sports Guys Podcast Network. We're going to get into the NBA talk. Before we do it, we got one of our listeners who called in. Heard we were talking about this NBA stuff. We got Nas. We're going to bring on from Atlanta. Nas, welcome to One Mic Real Sports Guys. How you doing, Nas?
I'm good, man. I see y'all playing that all the way up, man. I guess New York, it's been a long time since y'all had a summer hit. So, I mean, New York, I guess congratulate yourself. There you go. Finally back. Yeah, thanks for letting me on, my man.
We throwing some shots out. Hey, man. So you want to weigh in on some of this NBA talk. What do you want to weigh in on, man?
I wanted to get the free agency, but I think I'd be out of line if I didn't say much respect to LeBron, CP3, and Melo, and D-Wade tonight for the opening of the ESPYs, where they talked about a commitment to their community and address some of the things going on in the country. That was surprising and, you know, good to see. But the NBA
well, man,
stuff
you
want to cover?
Yeah, let me say that. I want to follow up real quickly on that. Thank you for raising that up. And I know we're going to hit it on later in the show. But we've been on athletes about their ability to use their voice and their power. That's what we always talk about here on the Real Sports Guys Network. I'm glad you brought that up. And I did want to give them the nod as well, because that you can feel the momentum. And even Steph coming up later on when he accepted his award, giving a nod back to him. So, you know, you can already see the ripple effect of that really set the tone for the show. So thank you for bringing it up. But you on with my guy, Hank. But you saying, so you in Atlanta, and you want to talk about free agency. Y'all got Dwight down there. What Dwight going to do in the building?
Maybe they'll go to the second round instead of the first round. It's going to be interesting. High aspirations down here in Atlanta, man. You know, hey. I have to be honest. You know, this is a diminished Dwight, but it's much better than what we had. Considering Coach Bud's system, but you know it's kind of good to see Dwight go out on with his career on a high note. I think he'll be you know really loved and respected down here. He'll never be that 20 and 12 guy again every night, but I think he can do some you know numbers similar to that, and he can be effective. But you know this team doesn't really have a true all star, so you know we'll only go as far as we can. But the big thing with free agency, no matter what, everybody's going to talk Kevin Durant. We're going to see the league pass for Golden State go through the roof because everybody's going to want to watch all 82. And I think this is media-driven. I think the media's 24/7 now, and the whole idea of talking about people's legacy in their 20s and this whole thing of if you don't have a title, then you're nothing. I think that's what pushed him to go ahead and do this so he can say, let me get my ring. So then I'm bona fide, and then, you know, my career takes me wherever it takes me. But it's just a weird space that we're in that we can't respect a seven-footer who can do all the things that he does because people immediately go to, well, what about the ring? Does he have a ring? So I think they forced his hand into this, but we're going to see some good basketball. Hell, we might see a 50-point quarter. Who knows what we might see out of those guys next year. But I really wish we could get some more responsible voices in mainstream media so we don't do this. Either a guy's all-time great, the best player to ever live, or he's trash. Like, and these are the conversations that tend to happen. You know what I mean? So hopefully we can clean that up. But free agency and the new salary cap, man, I'm ready for basketball, man. I'm willing to fast forward half of football, but I'm ready for basketball season to start up again, dude. I'm excited after this.
Well, And Nod, you hit the big thing because, and we talked about it on our previous podcast. We did one focus on the NBA, and it's as if the NBA is taking over the offseason the way the NFL used to own it. And the point you hit about, you know, this pressure that we put on people to define the legacy based on championships is real. And I guess the one reaction was actually interesting to me out of all the reactions, because we got this kind of this chasm between the old school and the new school evolving in some ways around some of these issues. But the one that was interesting was around what Reggie Miller said about the role. So he wasn't arguing the same way. He was arguing something different around the responsibility of stars to their small market teams. This greater responsibility. Did you hear that remark that he made around that?
Yeah, I heard that. That was one of the most company man, well manicured, terrible speeches I've heard in a long time. Reggie didn't have the ability to do that. So it was easy to criticize somebody else, you know, years later for it. But yeah, I thought Reggie was way off base. And the idea that an NBA athlete or any athlete, their first loyalty should be to a small market franchise and not their own particular brand or their own identity. As long as they're helping grow the game, what really can you say? And if we're going to talk about small markets, are we going to say anything about the Spurs not contributing as far as, you know, being the one to do the press, you know, really push the game forward as far as the NBA? So if you're going to criticize a small market player, you got to criticize the small market owners as well. So yeah, man, I didn't like Reggie's comments. I'll just say that, man.
Just move out.
So
what'd you say?
Go back to him.
Oh, go ahead.
Hank, you hit the belly.
Well, listen. What I was going to say, you know, you make a valid point about the small market owner. But when you're looking at the NBA right now and you're looking at what they're paying these guys, I don't care. Small market is just a name only. All right, because when you're paying players, marginal players, bench players, $120 million just because you got it to spend, that's ridiculous. It's really telling me that you've got a bunch of people out there that's got a lot of money that simply don't know how to build a franchise, don't know how to build a team. Okay, when you're looking at players like your Kevin Durant and these other guys that's out here, and they're playing on these small market teams, if that's what you want to call them, there's no loyalty with those owners. You know, when you look at Kevin Durant, you look at Oklahoma City, where did they come from? Seattle. All right, now, so he's leaving. They've given an opportunity. He wants to win. I don't have a problem with that. The NBA needs to do something true enough to try to make sure that the teams that they have there survive. All right, you have some teams out there that no one's going to come and see because nobody wants to go there. That's a problem. That's a league problem. All right, they can pull all the money they want to out there, but if you got teams that's willing to give you money, but I don't want to go there because there's nothing for me to do in Memphis, there's nothing for me to do in Detroit, there's nothing for me to do in Oklahoma City, then you're sitting here and you're just wasting your time and you've got all this money to spend, so you give it to, you know, Joe Blow, just because he's able to put his shorts on the right way. That doesn't make any sense to me. So when you're talking about these teams and you're talking about the NBA as a whole, that's a problem. That's a big problem. And that's going to be a systemic problem they're going to have to do something about.
Right, right. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Nas. Say what you're going to say.
Yeah, and I would throw on top of that, though, you have a kind of – you have a responsibility if you buy a team in a certain town that you need to spend more on scouting, you need to spend more on analytics. You really need to be well versed in how to build a team. So if you're in a small market to where you really have to depend on getting people in the seats, then you have to build a quality club. And like you're saying, irresponsibly spending money or you know, gambling on guys' potential, you know, of what they could be. That's just not a smart way of doing business. So if you're in one of these small markets, you've got to go above and beyond. And you knew that when you purchased the franchise. And I would love if these owners would open the books and let us know how much revenue was pouring in from China, Japan, and some of these other places that we now know are basketball hotbeds and the players might be getting a little, you know, a little of the sugar, but man, I guarantee you the owners, they are stacking up something ridiculous right now. The TV deals are not a standalone as far as what they're pulling in.
Let me tell you this, too. You know, we spent some time talking about these small market owners, but you got some big market owners that don't know their head from their backside if you gave them a GPS. Help me understand being in the media mecca, New York City, and they can't figure out a way to put a team together no matter what you do. You give them four players. The only thing they got to do is find one. Find one, and they can't do that. I mean, think about that a minute. I mean, how sorry has New York been? And Brooklyn, for the love of God. You know, they changed their team colors to black and white. I guess they might as well go on and get the hearse, too. It don't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? Think about that a minute. So, and Los Angeles. Now, there are some teams in the NBA that need to step up. And there's a lot of reasons why a lot of these small market teams are floundering, because they have to do it on their own. And with every league, you've got to have some staples to continue to, you know, flourish. Your Bostons, your LAs, your New Yorks, they're all down. Chicago, you know, they're all down. You know, so now you've got these teams that are doing well, but they're really not, when you think about it, they're really not appealing. Unless you got to your basketball NBA purists, they're not really appealing to your regular crowd, because you got your Golden States and your Cleveland. Yeah, it's a sweet story, but you know that's not what anybody wanted to really see. I mean, they wanted to see LeBron James, but they would see LeBron James in a tutu if he played in it. I mean, that's LeBron James. But you talk about the rest of the league, it's not really appealing. Now it's trying to come back with some nice young talent, but the marquee names, the names that's known to the league, they all suck, and that's a problem too.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about bad ownership, Jim Buss in L.A., Dolan in New York. Yeah, they've done horrible jobs. And, you know, the weird thing about this is we're seeing things just – oh, go ahead. Oh, my bad. I didn't want to step on – if somebody was speaking, my bad. If I jumped in.
Everything is breaking up. I couldn't hear you.
Right. Do you hear what I said?
Yeah, I guess I got a bad connection.
Yeah,
I guess I got a bad connection. I'll call back.
Well, yeah, I must have a bad connection. Right. I'll call
back. I really got eyes. Now, when good people come in and talk, this is what you got to talk about. This is why we love you guys going up. This embedded conversation in there, Ron. We got guys from Atlanta came in and get some really guys on about this. Really about this. Keep in mind after this, back after this, musical interlude, here, and talk a little bit more. One more second, and just see it, then we're going to get it some.
Podcast, and we were, you know, having a great conversation about some of the NBA basketball. We had Nas jump in here from Atlanta, jumping in. A lot of activity. You know, it's been a while since we, you know, I usually get folks on our Facebook, put some comments out, and I think Phil T put a great post on Facebook. His feelings around Durant's decision and my feedback. If you want to just go to our realsportsguide.com, click on the Facebook icon, and you can like us on Facebook and chime in on that conversation. A lot of great conversations with folks coming around the country have been chiming in on a lot of stuff that's been happening in the NBA. And we're, you know, we're feeling good about it. And the NBA is, in some way, we've talked about this, in, you know, ever since the decision, it's almost like the NBA, is, you know, the free agency has been crazy and it's owned the summer in a way that the NFL normally owns it, which is amazing. And so I'm here with my guy, Hank. Hank, boy, this has been a good show, man. We had a rundown, got some energy. How you feeling?
I'm still feeling good, man. You know, again, it's so hot, I can't help but feel anything else but good.
Yeah, man, and I think there's some good points. And some of the points I was trying to make earlier, because we were trying to connect with Nas and trying to get some things going, and I was there. But part of one of the things I was – one of the points that might be a legitimate point with Durant, because I'm all for, as I said before, and Game Changer and I talked a lot about this, you know, and particularly with how your legacy is going to be, you know, players got to make decisions about what's best for them, particularly when people are going to be, you know, placing them and evaluating them based on chips, where to do it. But the idea that Oklahoma City normally is thinking that the team that you're with is not going to put the pieces around you, you know, when you're up, what they were up on Golden State, and, you know, a lot of it came down to, you know, your ability to make decisions, as well as your co-star, Westbrook, making plays. You made two or three more possessions. Now y'all play in the finals. And then he goes out. He gets a great trade. He gets a bonus back. He gets Oladipo. He gets some other pieces. You get younger. They still have to make a decision on Waiters. But, you know, now your team is more athletic. You got a deeper team. You know, there's some evidence that they're trying to make sure we get in this position again, we can get over the top. Is there some legitimacy to that aspect of it?
Listen, I think that when you look at Durant, you know, we had this conversation before. You know, even when your boys said that they were going to go to the finals, I told you, I said, unless somebody can figure out a way to curtail Russell Westbrook, that was not going to happen. I think there's a lot of good that Oklahoma City has. I really do. But I always looked at that, okay, and Russell Westbrook, and there's just things about him, and granted, Durant didn't make some of the best decisions either. But you know what? I think some of that can be epidemic. You know, you got somebody who's going to take a shot come hell or high water, and then all of a sudden he can throw you off the game. We just got through talking about Tim Duncan and what he meant to the San Antonio Spurs, and especially what he meant to them when they're trying to win championships. Well, you know, when you look at that duo of Westbrook, you look at that duo of Westbrook and Durant, think about what they were before the playoffs. You know, they were a dumpster fire in the last 2-3 minutes of ball games, and that's because they would not take care of the ball and win games out, okay? So I think that had a lot to do with it. I think when he sat and thought about it, yeah, he could have got the money he wanted in Oklahoma City. And I don't think this is all about legacy, really. I think he thinks he's good enough that he could probably win anywhere. But I do believe that he wants to get with a team that knows and have players that are familiar with winning in the playoffs and finishing in the playoffs. All right? So that's what I believe. He doesn't have to go to Golden State and be the leader. All right? They've already got a leader. They've already got an MVP. All right? He can go out there and play his game. So, you know, I'm not one that I'm in favor of all this player movement. I think the fans kind of get jilted sometimes. You know, they get used to certain players. They want to see what those teams can do, and then they just, you know, leave them at the altar. I get that. But in this particular case, you know, you got to see what's going on the floor. And Russell Westbrook, as much as everybody wants to give him play, you know, how many times when this team really should be over the top have you just seen him just have a brain fart and just, it's all about me? And I just don't think – and they've got – Donovan is a great coach. I think he's a good coach. But he's struggling. I thought he had got to him until they got to that last couple of games. So I think that what you're seeing here is just, you know, what you saw all season with Oklahoma City and with Durant. And he wants to go where, you know, they've got leadership in place and he can just go play his game. Not that he's not a leader, but that he can be a piece and not just the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think I think that's part of it. I think that, you know, and we, you know, we talked about it on our podcast with Justin Page and with the Game Changer. The Game Changer described him as, you know, because he said this is a Power Ranger generation. And so, you know, it's, you know, they used to see folks do it in a group. and I twisted. I was like, you know, this is also guys who move more towards the Wu-Tang in the sense that, you know, you can do it as a collective, but y'all all can have your own album. But we all can come together for the collective. And I think that part of that influences, you know, how they think about going about things. And so, you know, to be in a place like Golden State where you know people are going to be sharing the ball movement, you know, I think if you watch how he plays with USA basketball, you know, he looks like he's having a lot of fun because of the way the ball is moving. And I think he'd rather play a certain way than what he's been playing. And I think, you know, people are saying, you know, there's other aspects of his game that don't get highlighted because of the way they've been kind of forced to play in Oklahoma City. And he probably doesn't see Westbrook changing that because that's just who he is. You know, that's his link to being like Kobe. Like, he's got that personality. And it's a lot of it's because he's competitive. Westbrook is so fiercely competitive about winning. He's going to do whatever it takes to win. And sometimes that means taking the shots. And so I think there was some imbalance for KD there. And then he went to the option. And so part of it is he's got to start then live that life of being the so-called villain. And they're already giving him a hard time tonight
or the ESPYs about he's the new villain now that LeBron is getting all the love. And so, you know, how is he going to handle that space? And I thought his press conference, he handled it well. You know, he kind of leaned into it. You know, but how are you going to handle that as the season progresses is something else. And so, you know, that's the talk of the town. We got right.
You know, I have a hard time seeing him as a villain. And the reason why I say that is because, okay, he came out of Texas, you know, the top two pick, you know, good player, but he went to Seattle, okay? And there wasn't a whole lot of hype around Kevin Durant, all right? And then they moved to Oklahoma City. You know, they become a playoff team, but you got to remember, they didn't even make the playoffs last year, I don't believe. You know, which got the coach fired. And so, you know, he leaves. When you look at that narrative, you know, versus a LeBron James, who was supposed to be the second coming of Michael Jordan, who was supposed to take his hometown, you know, team to the promised land, and he leaves, you know, with all of this fluff and pomp and circumstance, that, you know, it's not the same thing. Let me just correct you. He ain't that loved by everybody, okay? He might be loved by ESPN and all those butt kissers, but he's not loved by everybody. There's still a huge following of people out there that can't stand LeBron James, okay? And a lot of people that are glad to see Kevin Durant go to Golden State just so that he doesn't win another title with Cleveland, all right? So let's not get that twisted. There are some folks who love him. He ain't all of a sudden the most beloved cat on the planet. A lot of people still can't stand it. So let's just get that right.
This is about to kill. See, I don't understand the LeBron stuff, man. I understand all this cat that, like, he ain't never been in trouble. The stuff he does for the community, the cat is. I don't understand the narrative, man. I don't understand.
A deplorable character. Okay, listen, he's trying to reinvent himself, and you're right. If you just look on basic facts, okay, don't look at it as a fan of the game. Look at basic facts. You're right. Never been in trouble. Okay, good guy. Seems like to be a good father and all. But see, he come out with all that fluff. He come out with all of that stuff. He comes out, like, whining, crying. He ain't got to do all of that. You know, he goes to Miami and wins. It wasn't his team. He comes back to Cleveland, all right? You have some people out there that said that the whole playoff thing was kind of sketchy. We don't have enough time to get into that. But I'm just telling you the fan narrative, you know, that the NBA is putting him up on a pedestal. Not that he's not one of the best athletes. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about the demeanor of the man that fans just don't, you know, fans don't easily forget. You know, fans don't easily forget. I don't care what you do. If you come out and you done pissed somebody off, then you done pissed them off. I don't care what you do. I saw how much money he gave to homeless families in his hometown and everything. They can't, you know, but you still got NBA fans. They can't stand him, okay? And they won't stand him. And you got those that want to see him lose, all right? It's not personal, but it is.
I'm going to say this. I had an opportunity, thanks to Phil T. I'm a shout out to my brother. Had me an opportunity to go see him in the queue when they played Toronto. And I tell this story. I was in the queue. I think it was like, I don't know if it was game four. I think that might have been it. One of those. So we're there, and he's got like a triple double. And at the end of the game, they went in. He's got his head down there in the huddle on timeout. Fans are cheering. He kind of looks up, and he looks. They crazy. Nobody kind of pressure this guy. When, like, you know, he's the kind of pressure. He's been since he was a teenager. He's understanding the pressure he's been on. So I'm like, yeah. And so, I mean, fans would want to be with LeBron, but when you look at what he's doing, look at all the other out here that might be doing stuff. If you have to, you can have him a, you can criticize to him the ability to be there at a moment or whatever. You can say what you want to say about that. You know, and shifted the power dynamics of the NBA in a way that, for me, I can appreciate. You and I are both player advocates on that side. We gladly got the power and ability to go. LeBron is the one being able to help orchestrate that and push that. And so what I'm seeing is, and all the reasons I think you said is correct, but for me, I'm like, folks, if you're looking at this anyway, now, when it comes to our Pistons getting where they're going to get, he's going to become enemy number one.
Yeah.
You know that. You know, if Van Gundy get it right, I'll be looking at him like he's crazy. But at the same time, I'm gonna give him his love for what he's doing. And I'm, you know, for me, and then how he played in this series, come on. And the reason why I was saying about Durant is beginning to feel some of the things that LeBron always felt. Like, you know, this is how good Durant had it. His hometown paper in Oklahoma City, they criticized him one time. People came out, they wrote an apology. Like, I'm not leaving a town like that ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if that's the kind of love I'm getting, I ain't leaving. I mean, ain't nothing you can do wrong. You can become governor. So none of these other cats, Steph wasn't getting criticized, and Steph, if we want to just say it, folded. And he wasn't really catching that kind of criticism.
Steph did not play well at all, but – you know, since we're talking about that a little bit, you know, there was just some things that I think that they blew their wad trying to win 73 ball games. I think that they really put a lot of focus on that because that team did not play like a championship team. Okay, they did. There was just some things, and we can go all the way back to the Portland series. All right, the Portland series, Portland gave them fits. Now, we had this conversation the last time we was on that's an up-and-coming team, and they very well might be, okay? They've got some very good pieces over there. But that being said, you won 73 ball games. You're supposed to figure out a way to whoop everybody's tail getting to the finals. And for Golden State Warriors, they struggled. It was an uphill climb, okay? Granted that that Curry got hurt, but – there was something that they didn't look right. If you watched that team all season and watched them in the playoffs, they simply did not look right. And it seemed like after game two, it was gone. You know, and you just did not see where this team just – they got on the floor. And what we talked about before we went on the air, it just seemed like you don't know what to do at the end of ball games – to put games away all of a sudden? I mean, that to me just, I couldn't help but scratch my head on that. Now, some of that stuff was basketball one-on-one. And then when you see where you got Steve Kerr as your coach, old school, okay, played in the 80s, played in the 90s, and there's not a play that goes to the hole nowhere. All that was just curious to me, you know, for this team. And I'm not taking nothing away from Kyrie Irving or LeBron James. Yeah. They played their tails off, and for the fans of Cleveland, that actually gives me hope. You know, that actually gives teams hope. You know, they call them Believe Land. They finally got their championship. You know, that gives hope to like the Chicago Cubs, and maybe our time is coming. That gives hope to people like the Detroit Lions fans ain't got no more hope. But you get my point.
And one of the things, and this is where people was getting on me, game changer was getting on me, when I was trying to defend Oscar and what Isaiah was saying, is that people keep talking about the game has changed, but certain principles of defense haven't changed. And their criticism of the way people were playing Golden State was how they were playing screens. They weren't making them uncomfortable. They were allowed for them to go through. And that's not 80s basketball. That's just basketball. In a sense, and when you watch the way Cleveland played, once they made the adjustment and got the rotation right, where where they couldn't have Love and Kyrie on, and then Kyrie picked his defense up, but the way in which they defended the screens, they made it uncomfortable. And then on offense, they went right at Steph. And it's that kind of basketball, that kind of strategy that I don't always see teams playing in the NBA. It's like,
the great teams do it no matter what era. It's not just that the fact that, you know, people are shooting threes in the game. People are talking, but defense is defense. And how you play a screen is how you play a screen. And certain teams, if you watch them play against teams like San Antonio or some of the elite teams who play elite defense, they know how to do those things. They make you uncomfortable. They get into your space. And as you know, in tight games, you don't shoot threes as well. It's just how it is. And so at some point, you got to get to the basket and get easy buckets. And it was less about Steph because he was going to the basket. It was more about Klay. I was surprised that if you watch the way Klay Thompson went to the basket, he went to the basket with no sense of strength. He was looking for contact, missing, doing that. You know, Steph is not slight of build. He'd go there, and he was trying to go, but there are times when LeBron was coming on the block and shot. He's going to do that to Steph. But it wasn't because Steph wasn't going hard to the hoop. Whereas Klay is the person I felt like who needed to get to the bracket and finish because he was 6'7". You know, he could do that. And he would get to the basket and do a dipsy do a reverse layup. So the thing you're talking about, knowing in the moment when you got to get to the hoop and make something happen, draw some contact, get to the free throw line, I think that is an element. And I said, I bet you see you're going to see Steph get a little bit stronger this summer, and you're probably going to see him shoot more free throws, meaning that you're probably going to see him get in the lane a little bit more in his next season because he's realizing that at the end of the games, he's shooting 90% from the free throw line. You know, getting to the line is as good as hitting that three when I shoot 90.
You're absolutely right. I mean, and that's just the thing about it that's dying. And, you know, the big man, we talked about this off air before. You got this rule that they just came up with, this Hackershack rule where, you know, they're bailing out the big man because he can't shoot a damn free throw. That's not basketball. You're supposed to know how to shoot a free throw if you're a big man because you're playing with your back to the basket. That's fundamentals 101. How about this, NBA? How about hiring some free throw shooting coaches? Rick Barry out here with his old self said, I'll teach them how to shoot. They just afraid their manhood are going to be gone. But they're going to be 88% from the line. When you got somebody like Andre Drummond, I'll take 50%, 45%, hell, 20%. But the problem is that's basketball 101. That's the piece that drives the old schoolers crazy is when you're starting to see somebody chuck up threes, you know, with 2 minutes left in the game and in playoff basketball, which is back to the basketball. You know this, D. And this is what drives the three-pointer is the dagger. That's what it's called. It's called the dagger after rendered them merciless. But if that dagger is not hitting, you're hit. You're done. And that drives old schoolers, big men nuts.
Man. I want to just let y'all know, Hank is on fire. I want to thank my guy Nas from Atlanta for calling in. Nas is an example of the kind of folks we have listening to the Real Sports Guys on the Real Sports Guys platform. This is One Mic. You know, I always said I want to make this like the wake-up show for sports talk radio where the quality of the kind of stuff we get, you ain't going to get anywhere else. And so Nas is proof. We got Hank in the building, excited. When we come back, the world famous segment, Inside the Park with Hank. We're gonna get some music. Then we're gonna come to Inside the Park. Hank is already warmed up. Now he warmed up on basketball. You know what he gonna do when we talk some baseball. This is the All Star edition. He about the clown. So we're gonna get some music and then we're gonna come right into Inside the Park with my guy Hank segment, and he gonna hit you up with what's happening in our MLB. You know what? Because, you know what we doing? We ain't doing no half stuff. That don't happen.
Don't think that you can jive. you know you should.
Hi, this is Brett Bielema, the head coach of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, and you're keeping it real with the real sports guys. Whoopig.
Steve, right.
I missed it. But I can tell you I heard all about it. I heard every bit about it. I heard all about the incredible Hulk of the Major League Baseball, Giancarlo Stanton. Giancarlo Stanton is a man beast. All right, he hit the 10 longest home runs of anybody on Monday night. One of which traveled over 490 feet. Several others that went 488. 400. Think about this, folks. I'm going to give you a little bit of a history lesson real fast. You know, deep dead center field in Old Tiger Stadium, okay, this is way back in the days of Michigan and Trumbull. You know where Al Kaline and Willie Horton, for some of you folks who don't know, the old Detroit Tigers, the Lou Whitakers and the Alan Trammells, y'all have heard those, and the Jack Morrises, that's where they used to play. Well, dead center field used to be one of the deepest center fields in Major League Baseball at 430 feet. This was dead center field. This man mountain hit 10 home runs that would have cleared Tiger Stadium field, center field, by some 40 feet. 40 feet. Folks, that is incredible. That is crazy. And to think about this in the age, in the era of checking for PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs, and he's doing this. Never been tested positive. That scares me. In fact, that scares me so bad, I feel sorry for his woman. But again, I digress. Getting on back into some more baseball. So then we go back to the All-Star game, and we see a little history being made there, where we see two Kansas City Royals, Eric Hosmer and Salvador Perez, hit back-to-back home runs. That hasn't been done since the Dodgers did it back in the day. Very nice. And the American League, once again, pulls off a 4-2 victory. Now, I got to tell you, I was very impressed with San Diego and how they did the All-Star game this year. I, you know, am particularly fond of the old brown and gold uniforms. I know that probably is not appealing to a lot of you youngsters out there, but see, back in the day, baseball used to be colorful. Baseball used to do a lot of different things to bring people to the crowd, to bring people to the stands and to watch games. You would have brown and gold uniforms. You would have the Pittsburgh Pirates in their black and gold and their box hats. You would have the Houston Astros with all kind of colors in the rainbow. The Oakland A's, oh my God, you could see them from space. But it was fun. It was baseball. And guess what? The All-Star game was also fun. It was also baseball. And guess what it meant? It didn't mean nothing but you going out there and seeing some of your favorite players play against each other. That's what it was all about. And now it means that the winner gets the home field advantage. I, for one, I think that's played now. And the only reason why it happened in the first day because Alan Bud Selig let an All-Star game end in a tie. All right, so the competitive balance or the competitiveness of the game kind of got away, and the people booed and the people were upset. He could have let them play one more inning, and everybody could have gone home happy, but no. So it ended in a tie. So to keep interest in the All-Star game, he decided to say, well, now the winner will get home field advantage, which is not really fair, is it? If you're a Chicago Cubs fan, you haven't been to the playoffs, dare I say the World Series, since Jesus Christ was a child. You're not really happy if you may end up with the best record in baseball, but you've got to start the World Series. You make it to the World Series, and you start to have to start in the American League Park. That's not cool, and vice versa. So much so that the players themselves are having a problem with it. And they're saying that, you know what, that we need to let the competition between in the season determine who gets home field. Everybody else does it, baseball. It's time for you to get on board. That's absolutely right, and it's absolutely fair. If I played 162 ball games and I win my division, or I got the best record in baseball, but because my team doesn't play well in the All-Star game because half of my stars decide to stay home, now I got to go on the road, I'm going to be a little bit upset about that. I think it's time for you to do just like the rest of these sports do. They've got it right. NFL, the NBA, and dare I even say the NHL. They've got it right. Best record, home field. You do it for the wild card. Let's do it for the World Series too. It's time for us to get off of that. You know, it is what it is. It's a spectacle for the fans. It should not mean nothing but for fans an opportunity to go see some of their favorites. That being said, we move on to the second half of the season. You know, we got to do some mid season awards. We always do. You know, I'm going to kind of hold out a little bit for some of the rookies because I can be honest with you, I know of a handful of them that's been doing the job in the American League and maybe a few more in the National League. But we've got some things going on with some of these players and some players that's really having some amazing seasons. They really deserves a little bit of recognition. We look at the American League right now. We look at who's got the best batting average. Well, Jose Altuve, that's no surprise. Jose Altuve, I think he was 1-2 in batting last year. Little man out of the Houston Astros, still having a fine job. But here's a surprise for you, folks. How about this? How about Big Poppy? How about David Ortiz batting .332, finished coming in second in the American League as far as average is concerned? Who saw that coming? And we know the big man hits well. He's got a good eye, you know, but he's really putting it on. A name you don't see in the top five this year is Miguel Cabrera. You know, our Triple Crown winner from several years ago. All of a sudden now, he's kind of falling off. But you still see another name in there, Mike Trout and Xander Bogaerts. You know, the Boston Red Sox got off to a really really good start this year. They had four or five players that were just doing work. You may want to watch out for that team, Bostonians. I think they're going to make a push. Even though Baltimore Orioles are surprising a lot of people this year and having a fine year. And speaking of fine years, what about Mark Trumbo? Y'all remember Mark Trumbo when he was with the Angels? Mark Trumbo was a nice player with the Angels. You know, he was a nice the next guy up after your Pujols, after your Trouts. But he is leading the American League with 28 home runs, followed by Todd Frazier and Edwin Encarnacion. But the fact of the matter is that we watched the Baltimore Orioles here. They really put it together. They put it together here in the first half, and they are really looking like they're trying to make that push going into the second half of the season. We're just going to have to wait and see. Moving into RBIs, we see the Edwin Encarnacion and that very, very potent Toronto Blue Jay offense. It's not a surprise there. As far as American League pitchers are concerned, looking at Chris Sale. You know, and the Chicago White Sox have kind of fallen off a little bit in the first half. They really started off strong like they're trying to do something. But that surge of the Cleveland Indians are very well coached, very well managed by Tito Francona. I still believe that they're going to be the team to beat in the American League. Moving over now, who's having pretty good seasons, having good first halves? Just looking at Daniel Murphy with the Washington Nationals, leading the National League with a .348 batting average. You know, followed right behind him is DJ LeMahieu with Colorado. Colorado, you would figure with that bandbox and with that thin air, somebody should always be on top of it. I don't care who it is. You know, I don't care if it's the Coors delivery man. He should be able to be in the top two, if you would think so, in league average playing in Coors Field all around. And then here's your boy, Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant, who hit the home run in the All-Star game against the National League, their very quick lead. That young man is the truth. You know, he came up as a rookie last year, you know, came up a little bit, then he really tore it up in spring training, and then they sent him back down for reasons unknown. When he came up, he stayed up, and he's been doing work. He's leading the National League in home runs in that bandbox known as Wrigley Field. I don't expect anything different. And again, I just got through talking about a Colorado Rocky. Here's Nolan Arenado right behind him with 23 home runs. That's theirs right there. It's 100 home runs for the season just waiting to happen. Runs batting there, again, Nolan Arenado. You know what? You look at Nolan Arenado. He is. If it wasn't for the fact that the Rockies, he would be a very legitimate MVP candidate. He is having an amazing season. But a lot of your baseball experts, you know, really kind of look side-eyed because they play out of Coors Field. And like I said, if the beer delivery man could come in and hit three home runs, then it's kind of hard for anybody else out there. But I think that, you know, he is having a very nice season. I would also look to him to be perhaps potential trade bait. I wouldn't think so. I know a lot of the baseball people are just saying, you're crazy, we're not going to trade Arenado. But I said the same thing about Tulowitzki, that you know, if they're not going to do any better, they might as well get some prospects for him. And somebody would pay a very nice penny for him or cargo, Carlos Gonzalez. You know, National League wins, going to pitchers now. We see where Johnny Cueto is doing the job. You know, he's with a nice team. You know, he's with the Giants this year. Good fit for Johnny Cueto. Very good fit for him. You know, taking a little pressure off. You know, you got the mad bomber still over there, Madison Baumgartner, that was mowing down players just before the All-Star break, like a Toro tractor. But you got to keep an eye on that. But then this is an even season. And you know what San Francisco Giant fans say happens in an even season? They win the World Series. Keep an eye out for them. Really quickly right now, we're going to go and look at the standings, okay? We look at what's going on right now in the American League, and as I talked about them red-hot Baltimore Orioles, followed by, again, them Boston Red Sox. I'm going to tell you right now, you got the Toronto Blue Jays, I'm telling you, they've got one potent offense, and you got the Baltimore Orioles. You can see that's going to come right down to it. The Blue Jays and the Red Sox are only two games back. That's going to be fun to watch the American League East all season long. I think those three teams are going to be battling back and forth. Look for the Yankees to be sellers this year. I think they dumped payroll. I think that the thrill is gone for the New York Yankees. I think it's time for them to dump payroll. Moving on to the Central. When you got the dysfunctional American League Central, you've got the one team that's really putting it together now. Look at the Cleveland Indians are poised to run away with the Central. And then you got everybody else. Because, and when I say everybody else, because you've got two or three teams that's only two or three games above 500. They cannot seem to figure out what they want to do. That includes the defending champion Kansas City Royals. Should be interesting to see what happens in the Central. But, again, I look for Cleveland to run away with that. It looks like they're going to do that as well. Moving on to the American League West, we see the Texas Rangers now and all that firepower they have over there, leading the Houston Astros. All Houston battle, but I don't think the Astros have enough this year. I think Houston goes ahead and takes that in my prediction. And moving on to the East, now this is something that I kind of seen coming. You have a team poised to win. You have the Washington Nationals, a team that's poised to win. They go and get a veteran manager with that's got experience, and now look at what they're doing. They're leading the National League East over the defending National League champion New York Mets by 6 games and the surprising Miami Marlins. Now, watch out for the Marlins. I don't think the Marlins is going to be ready this year, but they've got a lot of young talent. They can get a couple of pieces. They can really make a push. I don't know if they've got enough to make a push for the playoffs this year, but they've got they're a very exciting team to watch. Very exciting team to watch and a very exciting team to keep an eye on. Moving on to the Central, you got the Cubs. And if you are a baseball purist, you're kind of pulling for the Cubs. If you've got Believe Land in Cleveland winning a championship, you've got to be pulling for the Cubbies to put it together. You know, let's kill the curse of Bartman and keep it going. You know, if you're a baseball purist, let's see what happens here. They're leading the National League Central by 7 games over the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Cardinals are never out of it. That is your quintessential second-half team. Okay, keep an eye on them. You may not look like they got enough, but they're still very well coached, and they're going to really make a push. And I think the Pittsburgh Pirates, I think the thrill is gone now. And then you just are wrapping up the rest of the division. I would look for the Pirates if they don't make much more of a push. They may be sellers this year. Sorry, Pittsburgh fans, but a Kutch can't do it by himself. And they've been very, very, very stingy with the purse strings. They've had opportunities to make a move to really get that team over the top, and it just seems like they're reluctant to do it. Moving on to the National League West, and as I said before, this is an even year. And guess who's leading the West? You guessed it, the San Francisco Giants. And they're leading the Dodgers, who I don't know. The Dodgers, to me, is another team that seems dysfunctional. They went and got an inexperienced manager, and I think that's going to cost them this year. They needed to go, in my opinion, and get a veteran manager to manage those egos over there. You've got an MVP. You've got a Cy Young player. In a Kershaw, you spend a lot of money. You're not stingy with the purse strings, but you go get Dave Roberts to run your team. Not a good move. Not a good move at all, in my opinion. And that's going to cost them down the stretch. And as I said before about the Colorado Rockies, 16 games back, season's over. Look for them to be sellers, and they've got some nice pieces, and that's unfortunate. You know, then it's rounding out the National League West. You got the Colorado Rockies, the San Diego Padres, and the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they should be last because they've got the god ugliest uniforms in the league. And I don't know why and who thought that was a good idea, but clearly they've been out in that sun too long out there in Arizona, and clearly they've been drinking some cactus juice. So, folks, what we want to do is I want you to stay tuned to One Mic. We're gonna be back after these messages. And we're going to get back and get D-Wills back on the mic, and we're going to do a little bit more talking for you.
Be right.
Gambling, you know you're gonna win. listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park.
Back. This is One Mike with D. Wilson Hank, and that was our world famous Inside the Park segment with my guy Hank. And as I said, off the hook, and we will be pulling out some of that segment, so people who just want to hit that up, we'll try to post that on. You can check us out on our iTunes, subscribe to it, give us a review. But Hank, man, I loved it. Mid-season, I probably watched more baseball this year than I probably have, and I'm just amazed by what Big Poppy's doing. I mean,
yeah, me too.
He found the fountain of youth. I mean, it's amazing, man. And he's having so much fun right now. And they interviewed him prior to the start, I think, of the All-Star game. And the way he talked about working with the younger players and passing on, you know, legacy. I mean, think about it. You know, this is an organization that, in some ways, it's the same way like the Cubs. We talked about Cleveland and all that. You know, they've won 3 world championships since he's been there. And his commitment to helping these young guys build a bridge to them was just, and how excited he was about the young guys he had on his team is a lot. I know you've been watching a lot, and, you know, I guess, you know, maybe just say a few words about Big Poppy.
Well, you know what? I give Big Poppy a lot of credit. What Big Poppy did, Big Poppy knew this was going to be his last year. But he made a commitment to get himself in probably the best shape of his entire career so that he would go out on a high note. And he's really showing in his numbers. And he is really a plus player this year. You know, you see a lot of guys when they get to the end of their career, D, and, you know, it's more or less just a thank you tour. You know, they broke up. You wish that you could, you waxing nostalgic. Big Poppy is doing work. Big Poppy is an integral part of that Boston Red Sox offense. Okay? He's batting .334. Okay? In his final year, all right? The man's 40 years old. He's tearing the cover off the ball. He's running bases. He's stealing bases. He's doing some amazing things. And it's all, you know, attributed to his preparation for this last season. And not only that, just look at the ambassador he's been. Look at the ovation and just the that he got and the accolades he got at the All-Star game. And that was clearly for him. And I was remiss I didn't mention that in the Inside of the Park segment. But that was all for him. And he's always been smiling and joyous and joyful. And, you know, he's adopted that Boston community. You know, he didn't come from Boston. He came from Minnesota. They traded for him. And, you know, he's adopted that community. He's become a leader. He's become a staple there. And you just can't say enough. And you don't even have to be a Boston Red Sox fan. But you can definitely be a fan of one of the good guys in the league, and that is David Ortiz.
Yeah, I think, in the colorfulness that he offers, and is what he's willing to say, I think is really important. I mean, he just adds a essence of what we talked about, that, you know, in some ways social media is stifled some of it, but because he kind of gets a pass as someone who came from a different era, but he offers that energy that being authentic that you would hope that athletes would do more. I mean, he just loves the game. People love him. Other players, the way in which they react to him says all you need to know about it. And in this time we have so many legendary players retiring. I mean, he's retiring literally on top. I mean,
yeah,
he's retiring.
You know,
he's retiring on top.
He is retiring on top. And I think that when you look at him, I don't think that in his case, if you're just watching him play, I don't think that in his case he's retiring because he can't play anymore. I think that David Ortiz, because he looks the part of someone who wants to coach or someone who wants to teach baseball, and he wants to dedicate his time to do that because he's playing at a high level at the major leagues. So you could make an argument that he could play next year if he wanted to, and someone would pay him the money to do so. But I do believe, just watching him, that he just wants to do more for the game outside of playing, and he has to dedicate his time to do that as he's dedicated his time to play this year.
All right. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, One Mike, with D. Wilson and with Hank. It's been amazing. Again, thank my guy Nas from Atlanta for chiming in and contributing to the podcast regarding NBA free agency. You know, this has been a fun podcast so far, and we're nearing the end of the podcast, and I wanted to take a few minutes. We have a segment we call like What's in the News, and some things that are in the news related to sports that we wanted to I wanted to be able to kind of push past Hank. Hank is someone that I've known for a long time and really respect his opinion. And there's been just a number of things that have happened up here recently that I'd love to get kind of his feedback on. And so, Hank, the first one I'm going to hit you with is the Minnesota Lynx. You know, they following, you know, really an incredible week that kind of shook the country. And again, this kind of theme of, you know, athletes understanding they have a responsibility to engage in these larger conversations, particularly given that, you know what happened in Minnesota, and they wear a shirt that gets a reaction that I thought was a pretty balanced shirt, meaning that they recognized the officers in the law enforcement officials in Dallas by having a shield, and then obviously the names of two of the black males who died at the hands of altercations with law enforcement, or not really altercations, but incidents involving law enforcement. Best way we can describe it right now to kind of keep the context. But I want to really focus on what we've had a long discussion around this national discussion, but what was your reaction when you saw, you know, these women who, you know, in some ways we saw LeBron and others do it with Trayvon Martin, but what was your reaction when you saw that?
You know what? I think that any sort of awareness is good awareness. And I think that the more visible you are, the more you can use your celebrity, the more you can use your exposure, the more it's going to get out there. You know, unfortunately, Dean, you know, this is not an old problem, okay? But it's going to be, as a country, we're going to have to say, when is enough enough? Okay, you cannot use some of these slogans if you're not going to do anything about it. You know, what happened in Minnesota, what happened in Baton Rouge, what happened in Dallas is tragic. But the reason why it's so tragic is because it's an old problem. It's a chronic problem. And unless we as a nation decide to fix it and stop acting like it's not and stop making excuses why it's okay, it's going to continue and it's going to get worse. Any job, I've heard it all the time. You can have some of the best people in the world doing that job, but it only takes one bad person to make your job look bad. You have to put a stop to that. You don't let good people, bad people, make you look bad. Put a stop to it. That's the way I feel about that. And give people their day in court. You know, when we start talking about these young men that get shot and killed by the police, the first thing anybody wants to say is, well, he had a record. Well, then let him have his day in court, okay? Innocent until proven guilty. Innocent until proven guilty. There are good cops out there. Good cops, stop the bad cops from making you look bad, okay? Protect and serve. That means in your precincts. That's what you have to do. Okay, then things are starting to get better. There's some things in this country that are not going to get better. I'm sorry. But as long as we act like it doesn't happen or that we can excuse it and poo-poo it off, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And that's not going to be safe for anybody.
And and carrying along those lines, tonight in the opening of the ESPYs, LeBron James, Melo, D-Wade and CP3 and
made a statement along those lines, and it was powerful to have those four men standing really in front of their peers, really challenging them to do more in their communities. And so you see this growing wave, you know, in some ways, some of the essence of what you saw in some of the student athletes and athletes in the 60s, response to their responsibility to some of these issues. And so there is a responsibility there. And, you know, one of the things I've always said is that change can't happen until the people who are in privileged positions become part of the conversation. And I think what was most disturbing about what happened with the Minnesota Lynx situation is, you know, you and I are both in leadership and supervisory relationship positions in our roles outside of what we do in the context of this podcast. And you will understand this. There are things that happen in our organization from a human resource standpoint. Because we are the faces of it, everybody else around it can talk. We can't talk.
Right.
We have to be the leaders in that, and we have to facilitate the transition and making sure that everybody is moving forward. But everybody else has the ability to engage in it all they want, and we have to be disciplined about it. That's part of our leadership role, that we cannot engage in that because of the protection that happens within that. And I think in that situation, the law enforcement officers, yeah, there's a larger issue there, but as people who are in that responsibility in terms of public service, you got a job to do.
Right.
It means, you know, even when you're at a Klan rally and people are going down the street, you still got to be there to keep order. But you, as a public servant person, you have a responsibility there. So then when you leave, that's not something you do. And then have, you know, the leadership there comment on that they were okay with that. Those issues are larger issues, but you have a job to do in that space. And so, you know, I think part of the bigger issue here, and I have great mentors who have been in law enforcement. I've worked in, you know, Charlie Tubbs, who put together the Midnight Basketball Program in Beloit, Wisconsin, and the young people we coached and what they did to go into school. I've watched folks do different things in the community. I've been fortunate to do it. So I think we got to be solution focused around this. And, you know, this is an issue, obviously, you know, that's what we do on Real Sports Guys. We're going to talk about this. And so, Hank, thank you for getting feedback at all. This has been great. We're getting near the end of the show, and it's time to drop the mic. And so I guess I get the opportunity to drop the mic. What I want to say is that we kind of build this conversation. That we live in interesting times. And sport is not immune to that. You know, when people say we need to separate this stuff out, all these things are intertwined. It was one of the reasons why, frankly, we wanted to get this platform on because, yeah, we love having fun. We'll talk about sports. If you listen to our podcast, you're gonna laugh a lot. You're gonna be entertained in those ways. But we are going to be folks who are going to intersect and get into issues that intersect sports. And the reason why, and I can say this for all my colleagues who work on Real Sports Guys who've been a part of this podcast, is that our lives have been changed because of the experiences that we've had in sports. In fact, the relationships we have of folks who come from all kinds of backgrounds were cultivated in a sports setting because we were part of a team working with people towards one cause, whether that was trying to win a championship, trying to do something. And in that process, we developed friendships for life that we maintain on Facebook and whatever. And it's in that locker room space that we realize that no matter where you're from, if you're rich, poor, black, white, whatever, we have the ability to all work towards one cause. And in that nature, we also have a responsibility to also engage. And so we hope that all of you find a way in which you can contribute us in one positive way to kind of get our country where it should be. And we will do that as part of what we do on our platform with Real Sports Guys. Thank you again. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. We respect it. Thanks again to my guy, Nas, from Atlanta, for calling in. Hope you call back. That's it.